Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Rain, a Royal Military Romance by Roxy Noir, narrated by Lydia Dornay and Will Thorne. 1. Hazel. Something clangs right above my head, and I wake up with a snort.
Passport,
the uniformed man says. He's very loud, very gruff, and staring down at me with the sort of flat, serious irritation only an Eastern European can muster. His accent is so thick that it takes me a moment to figure out what he's saying, and I just stare up at him, mouth partly open. The customs officer puts his hand on the luggage rack above my head and leans in, just a little.
Passport,
he says, very slowly. Right, I say. Yes, of course. Da. He steps back, I stand, and the papers that were on my lap slide to the floor. Shit, I mutter, but everyone else in the compartment is totally silent. Sorry. Prosti. The uniformed man takes another step back, this time to the door of the train compartment, and just stares at me, totally stone-faced. The compartment is full, but no one moves to pick anything up. Thanks, guys, I think. I'm starting to sweat. First things first, I need my damn passport so Mr. Ice Carving over here can move on with his rounds. Then I can pick up my shit. I grab my frame pack, sling it onto the seat, open the main compartment, and slide my hand into the slim inner pocket. Then I fish around, feeling for the skinny booklet. It's not there. I shove my hand in further. Nothing. I push my entire arm into the backpack, my hair falling in front of my eyes, sticking in the Velcro fasteners. Sorry, I say. Prosti, prosti. Still, nothing. My heart is doing flips, and I'm frantically trying to remember the last time I saw my passport. I had it when I got to the Ukraine 4 days ago, I think. I had it when I checked into the hostel in Kiev. Jesus, did I leave it there? Now I'm pulling dirty clothes out of my backpack and pulling them onto my seat. The woman sitting next to me, who somehow still looks just as fresh and put together in hour 13 of this train ride as she did at hour 1, glares. Everyone's glaring, but I don't care, because I need my passport. Finally, the bag is empty, and I peer into the entrance. My heart's hammering, because not only is it very bad form to leave your passport God knows where, my mom might actually kill me if she has to bail me out of this. She'd be justified, though.
No passport,
the man says. His facial expression doesn't change at all, but I smile at him desperately. My best, I'm irresponsible, not a terrorist, smile. It's here somewhere, I say brightly. My fingertips brush over a small cylinder at the bottom of the bag, and my smile gets even tighter. I look in the bag, praying that it's a cigarette that wandered in there somehow. Nope, that's a joint. I guess I did lose that one in Amsterdam, I think as my fingers go cold with fear. I have no idea what the drug laws are like in Svaloria. Lax, I hope. The man waiting at the door shifts, crossing his arms in front of him, and I pretty much stick my entire head into my bag. At last, I see a corner of something that looks very passport-like poking out of a hole. I jam my hand into it and pull out the little blue book, nearly collapsing to the floor with relief. I turn around, holding it out, but the guy is crouching on the floor, looking at the papers I spilled everywhere. Very carefully, he picks up a photo of Svaloria's royal family, king, queen, and crown prince, by the edges. Then he picks up a stack of papers, thumbing through them slowly. Finally, he turns over the folder with the seal embossed on the front.
What's this?
He says without looking at me. The train rolls from side to side just a little. I grab onto the luggage rack to keep my balance while I try to think of the simplest explanation for this very official-looking file with photos of the royal family and a surprise number of charts. I'm visiting Svaloria for the first time, so I was reading a brief on the country, I say. I like to be prepared. A couple people in the compartment glance at me then, and it's dead obvious no one believes that. The man starts gathering my documents back into the folder, and I kneel on the floor, trying to help, but he cuts me off.
No,
he says, holding up one hand.
Put your laundry back in your bag.
It's not really laundry, it's my clothes, I think. But that doesn't seem like a good point to make right now. I stuff all my things back into my backpack and cinch it shut. The customs officer is standing now, my briefing in his hand.
Passport,
he says, and I finally hand it over. He glances at it briefly, his eyes flicking from the photo to my face, and flips through the pages, looking at the stamps. Finally, he closes it. I hold my hand out, but he doesn't give it back.
Come with me,
he says, and steps out of the train compartment. I take a deep breath. Everyone else in here is still looking at me in total stony silence as I hoist my backpack onto my back. For a moment, I have the stupid urge to give them all a thumbs up as I leave, but instead, I take a deep breath and follow the agent through the train. Get a grip, I tell myself. If there's one thing I've learned from watching my mom, it's that cool, calm, and collected gets the best results. We walk through four more cars, heading for the back. Through the windows to the left, I can see the black sea, cliffs plunging down toward deep blue water, frosted rolling hills to the right. I definitely understand why this Falorian royal family has their summer palace near here, because it's gorgeous. The officer keeps looking back at me, like he's making sure I haven't tried to escape or something. I want to point out that we are on a train, but I keep my mouth shut. Once the initial panic wears off, I'm not actually all that worried. Not only am I an American citizen, my mom's the American ambassador to Svaloria. So it's not ideal that I'm about to be questioned by Svalorian customs, but I'm pretty sure it's going to turn out okay. As long as they don't find the joint at the bottom of my bag. I say one last prayer that Svaloria is cool about marijuana and follow the agent into the last compartment on the train. This one has a metal folding table in the middle, and two other customs officers are smoking and playing cards on it. They both stub their cigarettes out when we come in, and the officer I'm with says something harsh-sounding to them in Russian. No one makes a facial expression, but they leave and he cracks the window, then slaps my folder onto the table. We both sit, and he points to the folder.
What is this?
He asks. I take a deep breath, lick my lips, and make sure that I speak as clearly as possible. My mother is Ambassador Eileen Towers, I start. I'm visiting Svaloria because my parents invited me to spend the month with them at the royal family's summer palace. No reaction, but he flips open my passport again. I have my father's last name, I explain.
You're Chinese?
He asks. I'm tempted to sarcastically reply, no, I'm American, just like my damn passport says, but I know better than to be a smartass to a foreign customs official. Especially when there's a joint in my bag. My grandparents immigrated to the United States from South Korea, I say, because I know the question he's really asking. He just grunts. I take that as an invitation to continue, so I explain that my mother might be the most thoroughly prepared person on Earth, and she sent me this brief on Svaloria so I could learn something about the country before I came. She also doesn't believe in doing things halfway, so it's complete with photos of the royal family, several members of the king's small council, photos of the summer palace where I'll be staying, and even a map of Vilinsk, the nearest town. And of course, it's printed on high-quality paper, carefully organized with a table of contents, came in an official State Department folder, and was hand-delivered to my hostel in Kiev by a courier. I finish, and he doesn't say anything. Even though the silence makes me nervous, I force myself to sit there, poised, and wait for him to finish going through the papers. He flips past a couple of pages on proper manners, Svalorian traditions, cuisine, and traffic laws. At the end, he gets to the photos and spreads them out on the table.
Lots of Prince Konstantin Grigorovich, he says.
I look down. There's four of him, which is more than anyone else, but it's not a lot. Honestly, I think one of my mom's assistants has a crush, and I do not blame her. Constantine looks like the model for a prince in a Disney movie if Disney princes also dripped raw, rugged sex appeal. He's got dirty blonde hair and gray eyes. And in every photo, he's glaring at the camera with the hottest glare I've ever seen. I don't even like the serious brooding type, but I didn't mind the extra pictures of the prince. I didn't mind them at all. I look back at the customs officer and shrug. The documents were put together by a woman, I say. I don't know if it's true, but the more he thinks I'm just some silly American girl, the better. For the first time, he cracks a smile. Just barely, but he does.
The prince is very popular with women, he says,
and I raise my eyebrows just a bit. I can see why, I say, and smile back at him. He just grunts and collects the photos back into the folder, then places my passport on top of the folder and pushes both toward me across the table. I take them, relieved.
Apologies for the inconvenience, he says, stone-faced again.
It was no inconvenience, I say, nodding my head at him. We both stand, and he gestures at the door of the compartment.
We will arrive in Volinsk in 30 minutes, he says.
Thank you, I say. I walk back through the train, taking deep breaths. I can't wait to get off this thing. I've been riding it for 13 hours, and I'm pretty tired of being in a metal tube. Before I go back to my seat, I go to the tiny bathroom. I splash my face off, brush my hair, and pull it into a bun since it's obvious I haven't washed it in 2 days. I wonder if I should change my clothes since I'm wearing leggings, an oversized tunic, a sweatshirt, and sneakers. But everything else I have is dirty. Besides, I'm not formally meeting the royal family until my welcome dinner tonight, so I'll have time to change, bathe, and feel human again before that. Then I go back to my seat and study the briefing like mad. I probably look insane, muttering names and phrases over and over to myself, but the place in this compartment have already seen me at my worst, so I don't really care. Finally, the train pulls up to a small train station. I shoulder my enormous pack, straighten my spine, and get off the train at last. The air is summery but slightly cool, and it smells salty and fresh. I take a deep breath, glad to be off the train full of human smells. I start walking, and as I do, my phone goes off in my pocket. Texts from my mom start pouring in, all time-stamped at least an hour ago. We must have been out of range or something. I stop in my tracks and read them all quickly, my heart sinking. I start chewing on one thumbnail, something I always do when I'm stressed. The gist of the texts is, "The royal family will be meeting you at the train station, so you should look presentable." I look around for a bathroom where I can frantically change into dirty clothes that at least aren't these dirty clothes. Instead, I see my parents waving their arms. I stare for a moment and then hesitantly wave back, then walk over to them. "Welcome to Sveloria, sweetie," my mom gushes as I hug her, then my dad. Then she smiles her polite but slightly worried smile. "Did you get my texts?" she asks. "They came through about 20 seconds ago," I say. "I guess I was out of range, but I've got some other clothes with me. They're kind of dirty, but I can go change right now if that's better." A black limousine pulls up to the sidewalk outside the station. Two men in black suits step out, and the other travelers step out of the way. A few point and whisper. My mom puts one hand on my arm. She doesn't look thrilled. "Don't worry about it, sweetheart," she says.
2. Kostya. Earlier that day. I exhale and squeeze the trigger 3 times in quick succession. 3 neat holes. I inhale, exhale again, and squeeze the trigger 3 more times. 3 more neat holes, this time in the chest. Between gunshots, it's dead quiet and almost perfectly still out here. The dewy calm of the early morning on the coast. Inhale. Exhale. Right shoulder, left shoulder, right shoulder. At the royal residence in Tobov, the capital city, the shooting range has the full setup. The targets move back and forth, up and down. They can duck in and out of cover. And while it's not exactly thrilling, it's a little more interesting than the setup here. At the summer palace, I've got a paper outline on a hay bale in a disused horse paddock. I breathe in and out again, and shoot the paper outline to the liver, and then once to each lung. It's not as soothing as the range at home, because there's less to concentrate on. Shooting a hay bale isn't hard. But as I keep punching holes through paper, I can finally feel the knot inside me start to loosen. I exhale again, steady my hands. I shoot the paper's right shoulder so perfectly through a hole that's already there that I can't even tell. Then I do the same thing to the left shoulder. Now, I feel in control. Finally, after waking up at 4 in the morning again, the sheets soaked in sweat. There are some problems that the shooting range solves better than a 4-mile run or a brutal hour-long workout, and this is one of them. I lower the gun and step back a few paces. But before I raise it again, I see someone standing far to the side, respectfully waiting. The other palace residents only had to learn once what a bad idea it was to tap me on the shoulder while I was at the range, particularly when I've got hearing protection on. I nod at him, shoot my last two bullets into the paper target, then put the safety on and put the gun down, taking the earmuffs off. He finally walks over. "Your father requests your presence in his study," Nico says. I look at my watch. It's 8 in the morning, and I'm wearing a sweat-soaked t-shirt and track pants. "I'll see him at the small council meeting in an hour," I say. "He needs me before that." Nico shrugs. "He sent me to request your presence," he says. "You know he'd never give me more information than strictly necessary." I almost snort. My father isn't in the habit of giving anyone more information than strictly necessary, and that includes me, the crown prince, the next in line for the throne. The kind of person who should have some damned information sometimes. "Thanks," I say. I eject the magazine from the handgun and pull back the action, checking that there isn't a bullet in the chamber. "Has he said anything about the reports from the north?" I ask, still looking at the gun. I speak quietly, even though I'm certain it's just the two of us. "Kostya, if you hadn't told me, I wouldn't know there were reports from the north," Nico says, his quiet tone matching mine. "Your father hasn't even mentioned them in my presence." "Of course he hasn't," I mutter. "My father, King Grigory II of Sveloria, is also suppressing them from the state-run media, which is the only media in our tiny country. After a year and a half, the guerrillas are emerging from the mountains again. There's going to be fighting, maybe bad fighting, and we haven't warned our people." Nico says nothing, but we share a long look. I know perfectly well that I'm one of the few people who can criticize my father, and even in private, it's a good idea for others to keep their mouths shut. But Nico and I go all the way back to boot camp, then to 500 Squad, and then to the Svelorian Royal Guard. The Royal Guard is an old, old name. They don't guard the royal family anymore. Now they're an elite military force, more like the Green Berets than actual guards. After Nico got hurt, I convinced my father to hire him as an aide. Partly because Nico is sharp, experienced, and low-born, the kind of voice the palace desperately needs. Partly because I wanted to have a friend around. "He's expecting you," Nico says, and inclines his head, just barely. "Thank you," I say. Nico walks away, shoulders straight, his limp very slight these days. I don't even change before I go to my father's study. He wanted to see me now, he can see me before I'm presentable. In the antechamber to his study, his secretary sits, straight-backed. Anna has worked for my father since his coronation nearly 21 years ago. She wears her gray hair in a bun at the nape of her neck, has cat-eye glasses, and if she's ever smiled, I wasn't around to see it. All the same, I think there's a speck of fondness for me in there somewhere. "Good morning, Anna," I say, nodding at her.
"Good morning, Konstantin Grigorovich,"
she says, using the most formal version of my name. I've told her 1,000 times to call me Kostya, like most people do. She's known me since I was a child, after all. But Anna is old-fashioned, and I know she never will. "Is my father in?" I ask. She inclines her head slightly, the line of her mouth perfectly straight.
"You're to go right in,"
she says. "Thank you," I say. I step to the door to my father's study, and he looks up. I close the door behind me, and he sits behind his massive ornate wooden desk. It's one of a handful of furniture pieces that survived the nearly 70 years of Soviet rule. I clasp my hands in front of me, the sweat on my shirt cooling against my skin. He gives me a long look, his face nearly unreadable, but I think there's a hint of disapproval there. You asked for me, Father, I say. He finally looks up at my face. Yes, he says. The Queen and I are receiving Ambassador Tower's daughter at the train station, and you'll be joining us. For just a moment, I stare at him. It's not that he calls my mother, his wife, the Queen. That's what he always calls her. It's probably what he calls her in private. But why are they going to a train station to greet the ambassador's daughter? And why the hell do I have to go with them? Father, I have a fairly busy schedule today, I say. I try my best to sound respectful. He just looks at me, then looks back at the papers on his desk. After the small council meeting, I'm being briefed on the situation in the north by several of the outpost leaders there, and then I've set up a meeting with General Vladov to talk about the most appropriate response. The United Svalorian Front likely has Russian backing, he says, cutting me off. He's still looking at the papers on the desk. If we want to stand a chance against that kind of threat, we need the Americans on our side. We have extended every courtesy to Ambassador Towers, and we will do the same for her daughter. Father, I'll be meeting her at the formal dinner tonight, I say. I try to keep my voice flat and neutral, but I can hear the irritation creeping into it. Surely it's more important that I understand the threat that the USF poses than meet some American girl on her arrival. I want to say, we're not still doing things the old way. We don't broker treaties and trade agreements over vodka shots in back rooms anymore. I'll have Anna reschedule all that, he says, barely glancing up at me. I can tell from his tone that this isn't up for discussion, but I can't stand the way he's treating me like a child. I'm not whining that I'll miss my birthday party. I'm trying to protect my country. The American government isn't going to care that I met this girl at the train station when they're deciding how many guns to send, I say. Yes, but they'll care about what Ambassador Towers has to say about you, he says. He's writing something, his voice going vague. You're coming with us, Kostya. He still doesn't look at me, and the black anger inside simmers to a boil. Lately, more than ever, he seemed obtuse and old-fashioned, like he's ignoring reality in favor of the way he wishes things were. But he's the king. I'm not, and if I want to be, I do what he says. Yes, Father, I say, and turn for the door. Kostya, he says. I turn, my hand on the knob. I've taken the liberty of asking Yelena Pavlovna to accompany you to dinner tonight, he says. He looks up at me again. I don't say anything. It's not as if protesting will change his mind. It's more than time, Kostya, he says. A prince needs an heir, and for an heir you need a good Svalorian wife. Lately, he's been going on more and more that I need to get married and have a son, though my love life is the last thing I want to discuss with my father. When I find someone I think I can spend my life with, I'll get married. It's that simple. Yelena Pavlovna, even though she's a sweet, pretty, well-bred girl, isn't that person. Yes, Father, I say. Then I open the door and leave, nodding at Anna as I walk past her desk. My mother, the Queen, pats my hand as we sit in the limousine.
Yelena is such a sweet girl, she says. Her grandmother bore 12 children, you know. Her mother bore 6. It bodes well for her suitability.
I don't wish to marry someone because they can have a litter of children, I say. Her face changes for a split second, and something like relief crosses it. She herself only had 2, and we were 10 years apart with plenty of strife in between.
She's lovely and charming all the same, my mother says. You should give her a chance, Kostya.
Yelena's father is also in charge of the state-run oil company of Svaloria. The company belongs to the crown, but he's still a wealthy man, someone we'd like to keep happy. I think Yelena is a very nice, lovely woman, I say, trying to sound neutral. It's true. Yelena is sweet, nice, lovely, well-bred, and perfectly mannered. There's nothing at all wrong with her. But I don't think we've ever had a meaningful conversation in the years we've known each other. It's a bit like talking to a puppy. She's sweet, and she wants very much to please everyone, but she doesn't quite have the mental resources to give me what I need. Kostya, you don't need to be in love to marry, my father says. The limo goes over a bump, and my mother's gaze flicks to one side. I hate how casually cruel he can be to her sometimes. Just marry, he says, and the limo comes to a stop. The driver comes round, opens the door, and gives my mother his hand. She climbs out, followed by my father, and finally me. I stand on the sidewalk in a short row, and I try to fight my irritation again that I'm here, meeting some American girl rather than doing my job back at the palace. After a moment, three people emerge from the train station and begin crossing the plaza. Since two of them are Ambassador Towers and her husband, I assume the girl in between them is their daughter. As they come closer, I straighten up a little, suddenly conscious of the way I'm standing. The ambassador's daughter is pretty. No, she's beautiful. Gorgeous in a way I've never even seen before. In a way I didn't even imagine a woman could be beautiful. Black hair in a high bun, latte-colored skin, narrow brown eyes, and freckles across her high cheekbones. Her mother says something to her, and she laughs loudly, showing her teeth. The sound almost makes me smile. Next to me, my mother makes a small sound of disapproval. I know without looking that she thinks Americans are too loud and jovial. To make matters worse, the American girl is wearing leggings, an oversized sweatshirt and sneakers, an outfit so casual that no Svelorian woman would be caught dead wearing it. The spandex pants in particular don't leave much to the imagination, but I don't mind. I don't mind at all. She may be a tasteless American, but I can still enjoy the view. When they're finally standing in front of us, Ambassador Towers begins the introductions. My father is first, and despite her attire, the American girl comports herself very well. She pronounces his name flawlessly, and even says, "Honored to meet you," in near-perfect Russian. She does the same for my mother, and my mother manages to be gracious. Finally, the American girl is standing in front of me, and she's even more beautiful up close, in a make-me-forget-my-own-kind-of-name kind of way. Her sweatshirt slides over one collarbone, and I have to fight the urge to lean forward and plant my lips on her skin.
"Your Highness, may I present my daughter, Miss Hazel Sung,"
Ambassador Towers says to me. "Miss Sung," I say, inclining my head slightly, offering my hand. "Hazel," I think.
"Hazel, may I introduce the Crown Prince of Svaloria, His Highness Konstantin Grigorovich."
"Priyatno poznakomitsya, Konstantin Grigorovich,"
she says, and shakes my hand firmly, looking me right in the eye. "I'm honored as well, Miss Sung," I say. I hold her hand for a bit too long, then let it go. My mother is already making small talk with her in her accented English about the long train ride, and one of our bodyguards is loading her enormous backpack into the trunk of the limousine. Hazel climbs into the limousine, and when she bends over, I can't help but stare at the half-globes of her ass before she disappears into the car. I wonder what they'd feel like if I could squeeze them, how they'd look without the leggings on.
"Kostya,"
my mother says, very quietly. She's giving me a gentle but disapproving glance. Then we all get into the car.
3. Hazel. There are ways that could have gone worse. I could have been wearing cut-off jean shorts and stripper heels. There could have been two handsome, sexy suit-wearing princes. Someone could have dumped an entire bottle of cheap cologne on me before I got off the train. I could have accidentally said something like, "Your mother is a famous giraffe fucker." See? Plenty of ways to make a worse first impression than the one I actually made. I sit in the rear-facing seat and squeeze my knees together, trying to be as demure as humanly possible while wearing spandex. Polite as they were, it doesn't take a genius to realize that the Svalorian royal family doesn't really approve of being met by someone wearing a sweatshirt and pants with an elastic waistband. Plus, it turns out that pictures don't do Prince Konstantin justice. Not even close. He's hot in pictures, yeah, but way hotter in person. Pictures don't get across just how tall and built he is. They don't properly communicate that when you're in front of him and he's sexily glaring at you, you feel like an insect pinned to a board, but in a good way. I'm still amazed I remember what to say to him. For a second there, I wasn't sure I could even manage, "Hi," which is ridiculous. I've met attractive men before, for fuck's sake. I've met some really attractive men, and I've never had this reaction. The limo door darkens again and the prince climbs in, hesitating for a moment. Not next to me, I...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?